Hello, my name is Chip Ling, and you are listening to Total EM. I have with me today Jim DeCanto, and if you somehow don't know who Jim DeCanto is, I'll give you a hint. It's all about the salad technique. No, it's not how you eat salad. It's how you decontaminate the airway. And, you know, there's been so many different things going on since the last time we had Jim, which is way back at the beginning of when I was podcasting. I have to apologize to Jim because I'm sure I did something awful when I was doing early on. I just don't know enough of what I was doing then. Now I'm a little bit better after about 100 podcasts. But Jim, I guess, tell me a little bit about you for the people who may somehow not know what the salad technique is all about.
My name's Jim DeCanto. I'm a private practice anesthesiologist in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Very early on in my career, I became rather obsessed with mastering difficult airway management. This led to very strong interest in simulation because apart from handling clinical cases, I purchased my own simulators and started practicing advanced airway techniques on them, and indeed, I've actually invented a few. The reason Chip has brought me on the podcast is one of my simulation projects specifically addressed the challenges of pre-hospital medicine. The project is called the SALAD simulation. SALAD is an acronym for suction-assisted laryngoscopy with simultaneous airway decontamination. What I basically discovered after enabling one of my mannequins to vomit, artificial vomit, I call it airway contaminant to make it sound a little bit more palatable, pun intended. Simulated airway contaminant, the acronym is SAC. That may have greater meaning to some people on the podcast. And if it isn't funny, it isn't ironic, then you'll never remember it and won't matter. And this, as a disclaimer, number one, this is an open source project. Number two, this should be fun. This should delight you or disgust you or both. Number three, it's been made very clear to me very early on this project that this is a type of simulation that allows pre-hospital caregivers such as EMTs, paramedics, nurses, PAs, and physicians to bring all of their skills all together in one exercise, because it's obviously time-limited. You know that the patient's apneic during the vomiting phase and the decontamination phase. It gives you a bit of stress inoculation to do the exercise. And with repeated drills, you begin to learn some mind-body coordination that make the exercise flow the more you practice. So that's kind of a summary as far as who I am. I've been practicing anesthesia for 22 years now as an attending physician in the United States. I may have another 20 to go. We'll see. We'll see how this holds out.
Well, you've been very active in this time, and especially over the last couple of years. I feel like since the last interview, you've been doing a lot of stuff before that point. Don't get me wrong, but it seems like you've just gotten busier and busier with all this stuff. And one of the things I really enjoy about salad technique and all the salad training that's going on, it's become international, which is great. And like you said, this is for all levels of provider. It doesn't matter who you are, because right. you've got people who are physicians right alongside EMTs who are both learning the same technique in a simplified approach that actually gets them really, really good at the basics and then can really move on to airway mastery in a very no-nonsense manner, but in a way that still is very enjoyable about it.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing that it's almost like we've created a video game out of a mannequin. Usually practicing on mannequins are, it gets very boring after you start to kind of get it. It's a very static drill. It's very boring. And in many places, probably even in hospitals as well, the practicing on mannequins is sort of a hallmark of somebody who's a novice or someone who is not comfortable with their skills. And what I'd like to do, first things first, is sort of smash that paradigm that simulation is for the beginner. I think simulation can be for the expert or even the master. I think the more you practice, the more you learn. And indeed, one of the reasons why SALAD has become a national and an international phenomena was from the very beginning, I made it open, not just open source where I could tell you how to build a SALAD simulator. I gave everyone who tried the simulation an opportunity to teach me and teach other people something. And so I don't know if you call that a flipped classroom where the students can actually be teachers. Is that what that is, Chip? I don't even really know what that is.
Quite exactly what a flipped classroom is, but I still think that's a great way of doing it. But no, that's something that we all need to do in education, where we have that ability and opportunity to keep the dialogue going both ways. I was actually just doing a training yesterday where we talked about that. I openly said, hey, you know, this is something I don't normally do, because it was a particular topic where there was a very specific question. But then I asked if anyone else in the room has this experience, feel free to mention right then. So we had a little dialogue based on that. And it was a very nice way to do that kind of educational stuff, especially when you recognize that there are certain boundaries to this. And obviously, there are people with very different experiences besides yourself. Right. The other neat thing with this, even though I've never got to attend one of your courses, I'm very sad that I haven't been to a salad course yet. Like you said, the education's out there, and I've actually been using salad in my own innovations, and there have been some really heavily contaminated airways, and the difference of approach now versus what it was a couple of years ago is drastic, and it's all thanks to having at least this awareness of what's going on, even though I haven't trained directly with you.
Well, thanks very much. The feedback I've been getting nationally and internationally, it'll just come in via direct message or through Facebook Messenger or what have you, is that these techniques they're actually working in the real world. This to me is a validation. It's also a validation that this whole concept of FOMED has worked the way it was intended to work. And I think that when you and I were speaking, we were ramping up to Smack Dublin. Was that right? Is that what was going on?
Yeah. That was about that time. And you had just done some supraglottic airway research, and we were talking about some of the preliminary findings you had at that time.
Yeah. And I haven't done anything with that since, but I've been thinking about that a little bit. I think basic life support and salad is the next frontier. We'll get to that in a minute. But really, really what I want to say is that I made a decision to simply share this completely freely. I found some people who bought in very, very early. The guy who bought in the earliest was Tim Lewenberg down in Australia. He's the keydocs.org guy. Tim became very excited about this. And when we met in Chicago in 2015 for the first time, after having corresponded for about 3 years online through Twitter and also through his blog, we were corresponding about anesthesia airway stuff, because Tim is what they call a GP anesthetist. The way that the Australians handle a shortage of anesthesia providers, instead of providing with nurse anesthetists like we do in the United States, is they actually train GPs to do anesthesia. And so they are anesthesiologists or anesthetists that can handle regular and emergency cases. So Tim shows up at the Chicago SMAC in 2015. I got permission for him to be one of the instructors at the airway workshop, and I put him in charge of the first salad simulator that I really brought out. And so what happened was, apart from Tim being really, really, really smart, he's a very, very nice guy. He charmed the hell out of everybody, and he shared that thing the way it should have been shared. And what we basically did is we started the ball rolling and getting many people excited about actually practicing on mannequins again, and practicing with a clear, defined goal in mind. That is, this is a simulation of either a GI bleed or a massive vomiting in an austere environment. And here are your tools, and here is the technique we want you to use to solve the problem. And so that's where it started. Then Tim and I brought it to Dublin in 2016. We've had it in the airway workshop. It was a big hit. And then we took it to a bar down the street from the convention center. And that was a fabulous event where we had two salad simulators going. Actually, one or two, I don't remember, one maybe. And I also brought some other mannequins with me. And so we just had this incredible social event where people could come and go as they pleased. There was ultrasound training. This is what the EMS POCUS guys, Brandon Miesmer, Jason Benoit, and Jason Bowman. We had just a smash event. When we got to SMAC Berlin, the organizers of the airway workshop didn't want us to have salad in the workshop. I can understand why on several levels. Number one is that there was lots of things to teach in the workshop anyway, number one. Number two, the Airway Workshop is being held in the Carl Storrs Visitor Center, which is one of the cleanest, nicest buildings in Europe. And I don't think they really wanted to drag vomiting mannequins in there and upset their hosts. So what we did was the next best thing. We rented a Berlin disco, and we had a combined ultrasound salad airway event in a Berlin disco on a Monday night, with two bars, a bunch of disco lights and sound, and talk about practicing salad in the right place. You practice it in a darkened room with flashing lights, loud music, and booze.
That sounds like the regular EMS call for one of these types of events anyway, minus the disco.
you never know what kind of music you're going to find. So this was really one of these things where lots of us make friends without ever having met through social media and stuff. And these events like SMAC have allowed us to create real personal relationships. This drew together a incredible core group of people. There's several I can name them later. But the point is that it was their passion and effort that really took this out. And I did whatever I could to support them. The guy in Europe who really has done the most is Carmine Della Villa. He lives in Rome, and he works as a pre-hospital physician in Rome itself. And he's finishing his last year of medical school at Agostino Gemelli University. And Carmine has done salad trainings all over Italy, all the way up into Switzerland. The guy's amazing. This guy is absolutely on fire with doing this. And I'm really happy to have made the connection.
And Tyler Cristofoli, just to name drop that for a second. I mean, he's been doing obviously a lot too. He's been doing a great job publicizing it as well, I've noticed.
Tyler, one of the incredible guys here in the state of Wisconsin. There's a core group of them that work for a private ambulance company called LifeStar. And Tyler was one of the EMS educators in that organization until he took a job elsewhere. Sam Ireland, his good friend and colleague in the training at LifeStar, and Joel Porter recently moved to another position away from LifeStar. But these three guys were the big ones. My other big Wisconsin helper is Robert Barracks, EMS educator at the Sun Prairie Fire Department in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, just north of Madison. Anyway, the reason to talk about all these people, and I want to make this clear, is if you have a technique or you have an idea that really is of general interest to everybody, the way to move forward with it, the way I did it, is to share it and make it free. And what happens is you end up with a group of like-minded people around you. That's what went down.
Well, and you've expanded quite a bit. You've got all these different people involved, and now you're working on something new, right? So we're talking about camp is what we brought you on for today. So what exactly is that?
Camp is an idea that I came up with. What Tyler Cristofoli did this year was he was one of the main organizers of the recent Wisconsin EMS meeting. They call it WEMSA, stands for Wisconsin EMS Association. And he organized myself, several of his paramedic educators, and we also got Jeff Jarvis to come in from Texas. After I looked and saw what we did, after I looked at the curricula, after I looked at what Jeff Jarvis said, what Robert Barrick said, I said, okay, what we need to do is we need to basically say there are five or six elements to what we would call an airway management approach that would pass muster with any quality management program. So I said, we need to basically kind of almost brand this as CAMP, Comprehensive Airway Management Program. And I'm not really looking to create a course where you'd pay and go to it. It may come to that. But the idea here is, what if we could take the highest quality details in pre-hospital and emergency airway management, and even critical care airway management for that matter, and we could make this so simple that I could get an artist to make a comic book out of it, okay? So looking at what Bob Barracks did in Sun Prairie, for instance, what he did in order to create his quality management program, which took his first pass success rate with video laryngoscopy from the 70% range up into the 95 to 97% range, was he trained his colleagues with their agreement. They had to agree to this, otherwise it's not going to work. If you don't get people buying into it, they're not going to do the program. Is patient positioning, so it's ear to sternal notch. You have to ramp the patient. Continuous nasal oxygenation during airway management, during both the ventilation and the apnea phase. So nasal oxygen, the whole no desat thing. So he's using video laryngoscopy. He's also using a airway intubating catheter, otherwise known as a bougie, through the tracheal tube preloaded in the channel of that device. And Dr. Jarvis does the same thing with his paramedics too. Lastly, he is using the salad approach. And the salad approach, when you're doing all this, essentially is from the beginning, you essentially inspect the oropharynx with a suction catheter and evacuate anything that's in there. If it's a completely flooded airway, it's completely obvious, of course. Without removing the suction, you use the suction as a tongue depressor to open the lower mandible downward, compress the tongue. If the tongue is too large for pharyngeal size, like a Mallampati 3 or 4, this helps you get the scope in the mouth quickly. You leave the suction in during insertion of the laryngoscope, and you continue to advance the suction in advance of the laryngoscope to prevent the light source and video source getting soiled. With the device, the channel devices, the left park maneuver isn't totally necessary because it's a channel device, but you can left park the catheter or park it into the esophagus and then deliver the airway intubating catheter and then the tracheal tube. So that is sort of like the major elements of what I would call CAMP. And we would have to go over this with a life-size mannequin. Positioning, nasal oxygen, and the other elements as well, just like I listed.
A lot of people say, well, if you're using a video laryngoscope, if you're doing VL, then you can't really do a contaminated airway. Obviously, this is all bogus because you can do the suction as you're talking about. And the what you're talking about as far as introducing the suction first, you're putting it in there. Like you said, you're using it to get the laryngoscope, whether it's direct or video laryngoscopy. You're getting that blade in there in position as you're suctioning ahead of it to basically avoid any contamination of the blade itself. So DL for me is more of a rescue because there are some things that may be a little strategically better to do with DL, and I still keep up my competencies with it.
Yeah.
But VL is my first approach for any airway because especially in emergency medicine, you never know what's going to end up being a difficult airway. And so for me, I'm going in with VL every time, and I'm going to actually intubate that way. Even if it is a contaminated airway, we're going to suction first, suction through, and go in. And so there shouldn't be a time, you know, save a few rare instances where I really need to do DL. And even if I fail my first pass, which fortunately I managed to avoid that because I do everything I want it done the first time. But if I need to go to a second time, I'm still using VL unless I run into one of rare instances where I really think that VL for some reason is just not going to work out.
Well, this completely makes sense. And so, if you do the salad simulation in at the very basic level, the way I teach it is I simply fill the entire pharynx up with airway contaminant, and I have the student just attack it with a suction catheter and laryngoscope and do it. At the second level, we make it harder. We start to actually start pumping the stuff in on the student while they're working. They evacuate the oropharynx, and then we start pumping the stuff in, and it challenges them to have impeccable technique, to be creative in their solution to the problem. And that at a greater level, we teach other ways of handling the salad sim. The simulation could lead you to understand is the point at which you know that you're not going to be able to intubate the patient. And so that if you're trained to do surgical airway, the answer as to when to do the surgical airway may actually be answered by experience with this simulation. Because if you know, despite your best efforts and your best approach and your best equipment, you can't get it done, the decision's been made for you. I hope that rings true.
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes. I mentioned to you about how my practice has changed over the last couple of years from being a very different approach to what it is now using salad. In the last airway management that we had that was before salad for me was a freaking disaster, to put it lightly. But basically we had someone who's vomiting profusely. The attending physician I was with, he was attacking it from above with direct laryngoscopy. Patient just keeps vomiting. He's trying to suction. It's so bad that he actually takes the suction tubing because all we had at the time were yank hours, which yank hours are crap for something like this. Yeah. So he just takes off the tubing and just tries to get the tubing in. You know, obviously this is a very anxious type of moment and I can see what's going on. So I just start setting up for doing a surgical airway because I'm like, this is not going to go well.
Yeah.
And even if we do intubate, this is going to be a heavily contaminated airway. You know, this patient has already aspirated a ton. So fortunately, in the end, we didn't need to do the surgical airway, but I mean, it was not the ideal situation. Versus one of my most recent intubations that was a contaminated airway, knowing ahead of time, had a nice big suction catheter, you know, the big stick types like we've talked about. And of course, you've got your DeCanto catheter. I love those things, which I guess we need to mention you do have that product. We'll talk about that in a second.
Sure.
But I used, you know, the nice big suction catheter and I stayed ahead of it. And I really tried to suction, you know, make sure everything was clear. Once I felt like I was not going to have any more new contamination, I went ahead and went through, but I kept that suction catheter kind of parked off to the side, which we'll have to include a video of that. But I think Tyler did a great example where he did it really quickly recently, parks the suction catheter off to the side, and he's still able to intubate away.
Right.
But
awesome.
But that's the way I did that. And I've kept in the back of my mind, I'm curious your thoughts on this too. Some people have talked about with active vomiting, do you, when it's really bad, it just stuff keeps coming up, do you intentionally tube the goose, basically? Do you put an ET tube in the esophagus, connect that to suction, and actually try and help keep it from contaminating your airway further?
If you looked at the SALAD simulation and the techniques that come from it as like a level, level one is the standard exercise. Level two is if you're standing there with a stylet, a tracheal tube, and it's completely uncontrollable, you take the stylet, a tracheal tube, and you blindly pass it into the esophagus, remove the stylet, inflate the cuff, push that to the left corner of the mouth, and just let that be a passive drain, okay? So blood or vomit, whatever. If it's solid vomit...
Not connected to suction, just sitting
I there. Wouldn't, because you're assuming you have more than one suction of unit available to you. If you're in a hospital, you might... But it takes time to set those units up. You're probably only going to have one suction unit. So the way to handle this with one unit would be to place the tracheal tube that you were going to use anyway. Just place it into the esophagus, inflate the cuff, push it to the left corner of the mouth, and then begin the level one SALAD maneuver of oropharyngeal decontamination. Use the suction as a tongue depressor to put the blade in. Decontaminate the hypopharynx, place a bougie or place a stylet tracheal tube in the larynx. So that's another level.
I should say that that last intubation I was talking about was in the ED where we have two suction units on the wall of our resuscitation bays.
Okay.
So to me, that was just a natural thing to think. I didn't even think about how if you're in a one suction environment, that obviously that changes a lot of it. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
Sure. And I think a better use of two suction units is this. And we recently, I continue to learn as I do this, even though I'm credited with sort of creating this simulation system and this technique. We're continually adding on to this as we bounce experiences and simulation off each other. And what I discovered working with Yen Chow, another SALAD, he lives in Ontario Province, Canada, was the second suction could be used by an assistant who holds it completely overhand, but holds it in the middle of their body. And what they do is they come over the right corner of the mouth as if they're putting a large fish hook into the corner of the mouth. And they go down into the airway, suction that hypopharynx, and then they pull the suction back, but they deliberately grab the corner of the mouth on the right side and pull it out to give the endoscopist a better view and more room for tube delivery. And if they need to, they can actually go right back in. They're already still inside the mouth. They can just push it right back down into the hypopharynx and then pull it back quickly. So that, to me, would be a more optimal use of two suctions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's something else that if we have a video of it, let's add that as well, because that's a rather interesting technique.
Okay. Yeah, I think I may have a video of it. I might have to email Yen Chow and ask him.
Sounds good. So something else to mention quickly, because I did talk about it. I want to make sure that we come back around to this point before I totally forget.
Okay.
You have a suction catheter, and I guess this is a conflict of interest we should also mention too, but you have something that is much better than a yank hour for these types of situations. And there's a nice little meme that goes with it about like the yank hour is for spittle and that this is more for the true vomiting patient. Can you explain like these big suction catheters and specifically the Decanso catheter, why you feel like this is a better suction device?
Yeah, the flow through these larger suction cannulas are with thick liquids and with chunks is it's a night and day experience from the original rigid suction catheter named after Dr. Yankauer. What I did in creating the Decanso suction, it's the SCORE Decanso suction catheter, is I took an existing product, which was the Hi-D Big Stick, which was released to the market in 1987. This is a large bore suction catheter with a vent hole on it. It's in use pre-hospital. When I first started doing the salad simulation, I gave feedback to the company that makes this, that this is the absolute perfect catheter for the situation that we're simulating. However, because I have access to a lot of different medical devices, I noticed right away that the shape of the Hi-D was not going to work with a GlideScope, with any hypercurve video laryngoscope like a Storrs D-Blade or the King Vision or the AirTrack. And what happened was I created a collaboration with this company, and they decided to manufacture this suction catheter. And the improvements of the Decanso suction catheter over the Hi-D are, number one, the shape. It will work with the GlideScope. It'll work with all the other hypercurve video laryngoscopes, and it works very well with direct laryngoscopy. Number two, we eliminated the vent hole. The vent hole is still required in some EMS systems based upon what we all will probably say a few years from now is very dated literature. This is always the way. We've all been arguing about this on FOMED about how old literature is and why we still believe things that are kind of like we sort of know it's not true, but we haven't replaced it with a better idea yet. So the Decanso suction has no vent hole, so there's nothing to make a mistake where you don't cover it. And it has a curve that is compatible with the hypercurve video laryngoscopes. Now, let's go back to the turn of the 20th century. The inception date on the Yankauer suction is either 1907 or 1908. And this was a suction catheter that was originally, it was metal, by the way. And Sidney Yankauer is the head and the ENT who created it from Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. This is a device that was intended to remove the liquid phase of blood so that if you had a source of bleeding, you could stop the bleeding by identifying the site of bleeding and putting direct pressure on it. Or this is on a day before electrical cautery. It's also on a day of open drop ether, so you couldn't use cautery because it would cause a fire or an explosion. You would put a chromic stitch through the tissue that's bleeding and tie a knot to put essentially the suture applies the direct pressure for you. The suture goes under site of bleeding and over, and you tie a knot, and there's direct pressure from above and below. We're using a surgical instrument that's intended to help you find the bleeders and stop the bleeding, but we're using it for airway management. And it seems to have worked for quite a while if you're dealing with saliva, if you're dealing with fluids. But if you're dealing with thicker fluids, you're dealing with blood, it can be quickly overwhelmed. So the flow through the large bore catheters like the Hi-D and the Decanso are quite a bit higher than the Yankauer suctions because of the tubing diameter is larger. Just like you're attending, placing the tubing itself into the patient's oropharynx, you're getting a similar experience.
And actually, speaking of that tubing, we actually, I think it was the two of us talking a couple of years ago on this, was that you could do something like that, that big diameter, but you have a couple of issues with it. One is that you don't have something that's controllable, at least as easy as saying having one of these big suction catheter, large diameter suction catheters. And the other issue is too, is that a lot of these get cut. You cut the tubing down to size, so they have kind of sharp edges on them sometimes. So you have a risk of, cutting something, causing some more bleeding. Usually, that's not too big of a deal, and usually that they're not that rough of edges, but it is something to still consider when you're doing this. You're causing more and more airway trauma in a patient who already has a very difficult airway. So I think it's something that if your system can afford it and get it, which they should, is simply to adopt a better suction catheter than what we're currently using. A lot of our agencies, the Yankauer.
Yeah, I agree. Well, of course I agree. cutting the tubing and putting it in the oropharynx, I don't think there's any risk to it at all, other than what will happen is ultimately it'll simply find the lateral wall of the pharynx and suck the mucosa in there. It'll stop working. So that's one reason why that's going to fail, number one. Number two is you don't really have any control over where the tip of it goes except by rotating the hose. And also, one of the major purposes of doing the salad technique is the suction catheter acts like a huge tongue depressor, which can open the mouth and lift the tongue off the posterior pharyngeal wall to allow you to get the laryngoscope in. And what if you just shove the tubing in there, you've lost the advantage of using the tongue depressor feature of salad. Let's face it, you're sort of solving half the problem and not the other half. The goal here is to help you simplify laryngoscopy so you can get a view, the view that you need on the first approach, and then finish the airway and go on and take care of the rest of the patient.
We had kind of talked about this when we were talking about doing this podcast and getting on to record, was that I don't know if it was meant to be W, like George W. Bush, or if it was meant to be like Dubois, but it was stood for like doing the basics well. And so that's what we're talking about essentially, right? And, you know, all this stuff is we want to get the basics.
Yeah, it really is. You want to get the basics well. Berlin SMAC. One of the things that was said at the end, lunchtime, and then at the end of the seminar, which I really latched onto, was the entire theme of the SMAC Airway Workshop was do the basics well. And that is really what they wanted to impart on the students. So we were all sort of in a group. The instructors were standing on this really cool old stairwell, and the students were milling about. There must have been over 100 people there. And I got this on video where I said, okay, everybody on the count of three, repeat after me, do the basics well, you know, and we did this. And I thought to myself, you know, this is, if we had to kind of create an awareness of why we're going through the trouble of making a podcast on this, it is, let's find out what the basics are. Let's do them well and let's do them. Let's not skip over steps. If you want to do a quality job, you don't skip over a step. You don't forget a detail. You make sure you do what needs to be done in order to be completely successful.
And I get really annoyed. It's like going back to the mannequins. You know, when people say, oh, I don't need to practice on a mannequin. I do enough in real life and stuff. The thing is, you can troubleshoot and you can get so good at your basics if you keep practicing your basics. If you start only doing the advanced stuff and never really bother to go back to the basics, you tend to forget things or let things slide that you eventually will catch up with you and cause some issues. And to me, I think this is a very important part for us to remember when we're talking about doing the basics well, is it means all of the basics and really making sure that we can master those before we try and really do anything too crazy and too sophisticated, at least, you know, without acknowledging and going back to some form or fashion, making sure that we still are able to do all the basics the correct way.
I completely agree 100%. So last evening, I met up with Bob Barracks in Portland, Wisconsin. It's a volunteer fire department about 8 miles south of Madison, Wisconsin. And they are a BLS department. Of course, they're a volunteer department. And so what we did was we did a basic life support version of salad, where we were letting them use video laryngoscopes just to look at the anatomy of the airway. But basically, the exercise was fill the mannequin full of simulated airway contaminant, suction it all out, place a King laryngeal tube, and use the suction to actually shoehorn open the oropharynx of the mannequin to help you put the laryngeal tube in, right? And so we did this over and over and over again. Then we went to face mask ventilation. And if you look at the techniques we're doing at the basic life support level, I think that this is an area of resuscitation medicine that is sorely lacking in an update in techniques more so than technology. I think the technology is there. We're just not using it. So my newest challenge with salad really is to really address the BLS portions of salad. It wasn't too long ago that I came into work and I heard a call for help in one of the operating rooms where I work. And I didn't have to, I put my scrubs on and went down the hallway, but they didn't need me. They solved the problem. And I don't know what happened, but what I can guarantee you, which caused the problem, wasn't that the initial attempted intubation failed. It was because the basic life support maneuvers that supported the patient prior to going to sleep and after they failed to intubate were difficult. That is what created the drama, created the dangerous sort of situation that in which they had to call for help. So it's really BLS that is really it's something that nobody really wants to do. It's I think it's not. I don't really think it's well taught. I don't think it's well modeled. I still think it's amazing that you guys are required to do one-handed bag valve mask. I mean, you're anybody listening to this in pre-hospital medicine is going to laugh when they hear me say this, but if you come to a hospital, of course, there's more people there to help you. The residents in emergency medicine and probably all of the training programs by now in the United States, they're all being taught either you do the mask or you do the bag, but you don't do both. And this is so mistakes are eliminated in bag valve mask. So what I'm hearing here is we're forcing you to do something that in the modern day and age we've left behind in the hospitals, but you're still required to do it. So you better be good at it.
Oh yeah. And those types of things, I mean, there's a lot of things we're still doing that in the pre-hospital setting, especially where it's old school. We've got newer data, or at least we have things that show it doesn't really help out as much as we think it does, and that we need to do, again, the basics better, what all this comes down to. And I think sometimes to answer a question you kind of posed there about why we aren't maybe working on the basics as well as we should be is because I honestly think a big part of it is it's not as sexy. People just don't like talking about this is how you properly bag someone, because they'd rather talk about some cool innovation techniques. And given salad's a pretty cool technique, that's not to say anything with that. But salad starts from the basics and works its way up and acknowledges that you have to have good basic care before you can do great advanced care.
Yeah. Of course, you guys all know I'm an anesthesiologist. So, of course, I started with the ALS maneuvers first because that's what concerns me initially. I mean, really from the very beginning, I'm interested in intubation. But if I'm going to be of any use to the greater good of medicine, it's to meet people where they are and help them solve the problems that they have, not solve my problems. I've already solved my problems. I'm 20 years into my career. I've solved most, if not all, of the problems that I have in taking care of patients. And it's not to say that I don't have things happen. I don't have problems. Of course, those go on, but I know what to do and I know when to call for help. You guys are in a situation where I think, you know, it's going to take us some time. We're going to figure this out. And because we have things like your blog, I think we can communicate more effectively because ideally the people who would be listening to this blog are the EMS trainers as well as anyone else who's interested in learning. I think that if we work together in a spirit of cooperation, not that I'm ahead of you, that's not it. What this is about is making your practice more efficient and reducing chances that you're going to fail at what you're doing, right?
Absolutely. And I think this is wrapping well into a couple of questions that people have asked, if it's okay to move on to that portion. I didn't know if there was anything else you wanted to cover on that side, but...
No. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
So a couple of questions that people have asked me to kind of ask you and get your thoughts on. And then I got one that's kind of a funny question with it, but it is a good question. So one is, do you suction every time? And if not, do you at least have the suction out and ready to go? Now, given you're in an operating theater type setting, so if what you do there versus what you would educate those who are doing more emergent airways would do differently, also explain that, please.
Okay, so in my normal day-to-day practice, I use a tongue depressor. I don't use a suction catheter. I essentially use a salad style technique in every airway, but I'm using a flat wooden tongue depressor. If it's an emergency intubation, and I don't do very many of those actually, our ICU and our emergency department guys and gals, they handle their own airways. And in general, I'm not called to handle emergencies. But if it's an emergency, if it's a bowel obstruction, if it's a contaminated airway, if it's a tonsillar bleed, I use the suction. I may actually put a wooden tongue depressor in the mouth first to help me get the suction into the mouth, take the tongue depressor out, decontaminate the oropharynx, then push forward and lift up to move that jaw and tongue compress it into the thyromental space, then put the laryngoscope blade in carefully, not to soil it, do my thing, right? So that's an answer to the question is, when I'm doing elective anesthesia, I'm mostly using just a flat tongue depressor, but I'm using the salad style technique. But if it's an emergency, yeah, I go right to suction. I don't mess around.
Do you, for every airway that you are doing, are you at least having suction out and available? Or is it just, I'm going to acknowledge where the suction device is at, and if it gets to that, we'll take care of it?
It's half and half, in all honesty.
Okay.
It's half and half. I'm in a private practice environment, so there's a, there are times in which I stop and set everything up, and there's times when I just charge in, which I have the convenience of having fasted patients on an elective basis and stuff like that, you know.
Right, right. And usually, at least most of the places I've been, a lot of times you get to talk to these people well in advance and kind of assess their airway ahead of time and discuss any high risk factors or those types of things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you bring up a very good point that I actually do an airway assessment before every single case, whether it's sedation or general anesthesia. Absolutely. If I look at this patient and this patient has a difficult airway, that's when the suction catheter comes out and comes underneath the pillow. And in some cases, I do use the suction catheter, even though it's not a contaminated airway, because sometimes it can actually be better than the wooden tongue depressor.
And then the other big question that someone wanted to ask about, and because it's mainly because we see it so much on social media between Facebook, Twitter, whatever, is what the hell's the crab? And why is everyone walking around like they're a crab?
Okay, that was sort of an exercise in ergonomics. I discovered that if you hold the laryngoscope in the ice pick position, that if you have a hypercurved video laryngoscope, you can actually place it more easily overhand than you can in the usual sort of underhand position. And so I do this little sort of like this little little play act where I hold the suction in the upside down ice pick position, you know, and I hold the laryngoscope in the overhand position, and then I bend my knees and I put my arms out kind of like I'm a crab with claws, and then I walk in sideways. The technique to do this is actually in many ways to teach you the ergonomics of how to intubate a patient from the side of the bed, not the head of the bed. So these ergonomics work when you approach from almost a 45 degree angle to the head of the bed instead of at the usual 12 o'clock position. You're out around, 7 o'clock to 7:30 on the face of a clock when you approach the patient. That's actually how, in most cases, I actually approach most airways now. I don't approach from the head of the bed. I come off to the side because as we start to ramp these patients, I'm not that tall. And even if I'm using step stools, I can't get up over the top of people. I have to approach them from the side. And if they're 500 or 650 pounds, and I've had patients like this, you have to approach them from the side. There's just too much. So the crab came about by just examining ergonomics and simulation and in clinical practice. And it just makes people bust a gut laughing. But I teach them that if you had to approach a patient from the side, either because you're in a vehicle, you're in like an ambulance or an air ambulance, helicopter, whatever, or you're just in a situation where you have to approach the airway from the side, if you don't have a plan to approach it from the side, you're going to be distracted and you're not going to be very good at it. So this is just an exercise to teach you a different way to use your own body to get the tools to do something you want it to do.
And this works well with awake intubations where you have these people that are sitting almost upright or actually upright as well, correct?
Right, right. It does. And indeed, you know, if I'm doing an intubation with sedation like that, that's the ergonomics are perfect for an overhand insertion of the video laryngoscope, whether it's a MAC shaped or a hypercurve shape. You're obviously not going to place the suction into the oropharynx on a sedated patient like that unless they force your hand and they regurgitate or there's blood or what have you.
Well, perfect. Well, I'm glad you got to answer that one because, like I said, the crab technique question is something that people ask a lot, or at least, you know, bring up is what the hell is Jim doing and why? But But it's clever, and it really does, when you see the breakdown of it, especially when you kind of walk in sideways, you do everything like that, it makes sense why you're doing that. But I think it's just something that when a lot of people are flipping through Facebook or Twitter, they're trying to figure out what you're doing. So thank you for answering that question as well.
Sure. It is intended to be entertaining and humorous to a degree, because I'm trying to share my own enthusiasm for this. And secondly, hopefully it's going to rub off on someone, and they're going to learn it, and it's going to be of use to them, and it's going to help them in their career. And I do have something interesting to say about that. When I first started sharing the salad simulation with EMS professionals, I saw this happen on at least two occasions, where someone with at least 10 or 15 years of experience walks up to the salad mannequin, and one of them made a remark. I said, "Oh, I'm really not looking forward to this," one guy said. And I watched his body posture. And what happened was that he took a breath, and instead of the breath relaxing him, he began to almost build tension in his body, as if he was going to lift the mannequin up off the table and just throw it through a window, right? Okay. And what I saw in him was that he was experiencing the tension that he had built up in himself regarding managing a soiled airway. And so what happened was he went through the exercise. At first, he was rather clumsy because he was really, he had a lot of emotion in him that was coming out while he was doing this exercise. And what happened is, as he did the exercise again and again and again, he got smoother and smoother and smoother. And then finally, he got to the point where he didn't feel like he needed to do it anymore. And then he walked away from it. And what I saw was that this thing was almost like an airway PTSD therapy device. I said to myself, holy smokes, I have just actually created something that not only taught someone something, but it allowed them to work through their stuff. Because when I saw all that go down, I figured out that I think that these clinical situations can be bad enough that it literally erases anyone's enthusiasm for their job, possibly makes them even quit and move on to another career. That's what I really, really think. I think that's how bad this problem can be when you are tasked with saving someone and you're helpless. I think that this can literally ruin your career or make you depressed or all sorts of stuff. This is bad news.
I would agree with that. I think difficult airways, especially difficult airways that just don't go well in the end, tend to cause those types of emotions. There was one very early in my career that kind of was hard to do. But after learning some other techniques and things, you know, I look back on that and said, man, I wish I knew that at the time. But absolutely, there are little things like that that make all the difference in the world. And that's one of the great things about salad, is that it's making a lot more people a lot more comfortable with how to manage such soiled airways.
Totally. So let's say we fast forward 5 or 10 years, and hopefully it'll be 5 and not 10. What if I can have an academic output? I'm still in private practice, so I actually do have an academic output in private practice. What if I can help write a chapter in a book that's accepted by the technical colleges and community colleges of the U.S. systems that teach EMS, and your new grad EMT basics and paramedics come out of training having experienced the simulation and this technique as their approach to airway management? Where does that put EMS, both in the United States as well as worldwide, if we could literally make this something that you experience at the introductory level? Where would that put them on the curve of experience and ability? Let me ask you that, Chip.
I personally think it would change a lot, and I think it's something that needs to be part of the standard approach, because when you don't have that type of training, and I remember in my EMT class, we barely touched airway management. And we talked about, yeah, you suction, you go in for a few seconds, and then you come back out, and you go in for a few seconds, you come back out. And that was about all that was really discussed. So when it came to actually dealing with the contaminated airway, you really didn't know anything other than, okay, kind of suction and maybe stick an LMA down and we'll call that good. You know, and at the time, LMA was, we were trained strictly on combi tubes.
Okay, this statement is not meant to be critical of the existing method of training, but what I'm hearing is that in order for you to build experience with airway management, you have to practice on patients, but you have an incomplete vision of how to do it. And so it doesn't make sense to me to move forward training in that method. I think with the ability that we have to do these things in simulation affordably, this is why, I mean, if I wanted anything, I'd simply want this to be adopted by the training organizations. I'd like it to enter into the culture of EMS training and on an initial and an ongoing basis. It sets the bar a bit higher, but it also gives even the basic level entry person an understanding and an ability that it normally takes them years and several patients to get. And I think that these individuals possibly are horrified by the experience of learning what they need to learn. I think we can teach this in simulation.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that too. And I think that's the biggest part of all this is we need to have this at least somewhat standardized. And it may be something that's really basic to start with, but that we need to have this built into current simulation and training programs. What we have right now, or at least what we had a few years ago when I was going through my own training, but talking to new students sounds like it's the same issues, is we need to get a lot better at how to manage airways in general, especially at the basic levels, but also how to handle with some of those more difficult types of airways, such as contaminated airways.
The entire discussion of ventilation is a separate topic, I think that you and I should talk about that on another podcast. But face mask ventilation is it's hard to do the way we've taught it.
So as we are wrapping up here, do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about before we ended the conversation this time?
I do have one other disclosure. I invented a mannequin available from NASCO. I'm mentioning this only if you wanted a disclosure, there it is. But there is a commercial version of the salad mannequin. Should you desire to try to build your own, if you Google my name and the word salad, there's two websites that have instructions on how to build a salad mannequin using your existing mannequin. One of them is with Jonathan Downham in the UK. And the other one, I think Yen Chao posted it on, let me see, where is it? It's airwaynautics.com. So you can build your own trainer if you want to buy one. Ultimately, some organizations may decide they just needed a standardized training device, and that there it is. That can be obtained from NASCO, NASCO. It's a Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin local company. These things are actually made in America.
Brilliant. We'll also try and include all these types of things in the show notes too.
Awesome.
Anything else, Jim?
No, I think that we covered it very well. I think that our goal here was really to kind of paint this with a broad brush, not to pick things apart too individually. I think the learning in this is going to come from experiencing the simulation. I am going to be working on trying to write this up in sort of a little monograph or guidebook. I've already written a chapter on this for a simulation textbook, but I think I need to bring it more down to earth than, writing for the simulation literature.
Sounds great. Well, Jim, I have a quick question for you. Can you, I'm going to have you give us the tagline.
Right on. Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.